Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to begin by thanking Bob for putting me after the sweet butter rather than the scallions. Thomas Huxley said that a man of science after the age of 60 does more harm than good. He didn't know about Dale Corson. I would like to tell you why Huxley was wrong from the perspectives of the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and the National Research Council. To begin with, Dale is a member of the NAE, in itself recognition of distinction. He was also awarded the Public Service Medal of the NAS, as you saw in the film, the inscription read, Distinguished Contributions to the Application of Science to the Public Welfare. That makes Dale an honorary member invited to participate in all Academy of Science activities. He is therefore one of the few people in the country in the ranks of both organizations. As a medalist, he joins the company of Goethals and Gorgas, the builders of the Panama Canal, Vannevar Bush, Carl Compton, David Packard, Jerry Wiesner, Carl Sagan, Arnold Beckman, among other illustrious figures in the history of American science, technology, and public affairs. When Dale retired from the Cornell presidency, he may have exited with a fanfare, but there was a discreet re-entry into the world of public affairs through another door by participating in the committees of the National Research Council and the academies, typically as chair. During my term of office alone, as president of the NAS, chair of the National Research Council, Dale served on 12 of the most important committees of the academy complex, and that has to be a record. It means that he had to ask Nellie 12 times for permission, because whenever I called and asked him for his help, he would say, I will have to ask Nellie. Because of executive orders signed by Presidents Lincoln, Wilson, Eisenhower, and Bush, all still in effect, and legislation passed by Congress as early as 1863 and as late as 1997, the Academy complex has a special status in our country as an official advisor to the government. It has been called the most influential advisory group in the world. I tell you all of this to place in perspective Dale's work with the academies and his contributions to the nation. I will give two examples, but first let me say something about Dale's unique qualities as a leader of the Academy and NRC panels. These committees are made up of scientists, engineers, executives from academia and industry, government officials with a heavy sprinkling of economists and other social scientists, and lawyers. They are typically successful. These people are successful and overcommitted, independent, and self-confident, and they hold strong opinions. Yet Dale, in his quiet way, with his soft voice and his almost monotone demeanor, in this way he could inspire them to work beyond where they would or could. He could bring consensus, not at the lowest common denominator, but at a high level where committee advice could have an impact. In effect, it was akin to milking sacred cows with cold hands. And that's leadership. Now let me give you two examples. Joe Wyatt mentioned the government university industry roundtable. When we started that at the academies, we knew we had to find a chair that could make it work, because without such a person, such an extraordinary idea couldn't possibly succeed in Washington, with all the legal reasons why you couldn't do such a thing. And Dale, of course, was our choice. Joe mentioned all of the contributions, but there was one that I remember that Dale brought off when he chaired that roundtable. If you remember receiving government grants back in the 80s, if you wanted permission as a grantee to make a trip to a meeting that you didn't describe in your original proposal, or if you wanted to switch from a graduate student to a postdoc, you had to send a letter to Washington and get permission. And if you were lucky, it would come back 3 or 4 months later after the meeting had a date or the postdoc went somewhere else. And so we had to find a way, without advising the government, because that was illegal, to tell them how significant this bureaucratic restriction was in reducing the productivity of American scientists. Well, we just discussed it with them and described these difficulties, and they went away on their own, NIH, a deputy director, OMB people, and they came back with an experiment. Let's see if we can reduce these restrictions, have the scientists ask for local permission on their campus rather than having to write to a Washington office. Well, that proved successful, and the program was expanded, and now it covers all of the scientists working today. Another example, and that's Dale's chair of the panel on scientific communication and national security. Some of you may remember, early in the Reagan administration, there were some executives, assistant secretaries in the Defense Department who wanted to restrict the publication of unclassified material in many areas of physics, electrical engineering, mathematics, and so on. This was unclassified stuff that we would publish normally in any way. But they thought this was a way of using government money to send know-how to countries that might be potential enemies. And of course, there was a large outcry by the scientific community. Well, again, we called upon Dale to chair this Academy's committee, and they came in with a report that was so persuasive that I think it was the most important event in convincing the government to make a change. Dale, I don't know if you remember, but at the evening dinner where we released the report to the government officials, members of Congress, Ed Meese showed up and was in the audience. And we were so persuasive, you were so persuasive, that within a few weeks, that potential restriction on free communication of science was removed. So, Dale, you functioned in difficult times, but you always finished in style and with influence. You helped our government by preventing mistakes and adopting better policies. You made all of us at the academies and the Research Council look good, and for that you have our deep appreciation. And for that matter, the nation is in your debt.